Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's a mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lanes. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Turn it up.
Now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Indeed. Episode 193, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam show. I am your host, Chris Featherstone, getting live in a living color, getting funky like a monkey, if you will, ladies and gentlemen. You know we do that every week. And a special homage to Dusty Rhodes, as we do every week. And this person I'm about to bring on the show live always speaks of Dusty Rhodes being one of his mentors and someone that has really put him to really understanding and honing his craft and professional wrestling. The legendary, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I like to present the legendary Diamond Dallas Page. How are you tonight, sir?
Awesome, guys. How are you guys? Heard your whole intro there. That sounded good.
Indeed. Thank you very much. So first things first, let's put over DDP Yoga and your Jake DVD. So I'm a fellow purchaser, subscriber, practicer of DDP Yoga. I've had some back problems for quite some time now, and I've used DDP Yoga to help me out with my back problems. And so DDP Yoga's been on Shark Tank. DDP Yoga's been all over the world as far as popularity is concerned. Let us know, for those who have been living under a rock for some reason, who have no idea what DDP Yoga is, let them know about it.
Well, you got to start that in the beginning. I always have to open with this because I'm the guy who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga the first 42 years of my life. But when you start wrestling at 35 and your career takes off at 40, which was in 1996, 97 and 98, I was on top of the world wrestling 270 days a year. You know, everyone from Hulk Hogan to Goldberg to me and Malone against Rodman and Hogan, me and Jay Leno against Hogan and Bischoff. It was crazy, man, because, you know, I wasn't just wrestling 270 days a year. I was on the road, you know, doing The Tonight Show, Hollywood Squares, Ready to Rumble. I mean, I was had a crazy, feverish schedule. And right at the end of 98, I blew my back out so badly that three back specialists told me my wrestling career was over. And I just signed a multi-million-dollar three-year deal. So, I mean, I finally was getting paid, and I wouldn't get paid anything compared to what, you know, the other guys who were in the main event was getting paid. And I mean, nowhere near it for 97 and 98. So finally I was getting paid, and then they told me it was all going away. So it wasn't just the money. You know, the money obviously was part of it, but it was living the dream. And when you tell me you're going to take that away from me, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to hold on to it. Yeah. And, you know, because I, you know, like everybody, anybody who watched wrestling, you know, in 97, you know, 96, 97, and 98, no, in 97, you know, my career exploded. And to take it all away, you know, again, I'd try anything. That's how yoga came into my world. I fought it at first, but then once I realized how amazing it was starting to heal my body, along with the rehabilitation techniques I was doing, because I rehabbed both shoulders and both knees, you know, going to rehab and, you know, breaking up scar tissue. I know a lot about that, which alleviates pain, creates flexibility. So I just put them together. And then I added in some old school calisthenics, push-ups, squats, crunches, stuff we all grew up with, and did them with a slow burn movement, which means you move slow, like you're engaging muscles. And what I figured out, again, by accident, that every time you flex or engage a muscle, your heart has to beat faster to get the blood to the muscle. So completely by accident, I developed what would now be known as DDP yoga, which is kick-ass cardio, dramatically increased my flexibility and core strength, and all with minimal joint impact. So it didn't beat my body up while I was doing it. It healed my body. In less than 3 months, I was back in the ring. So at 42, these guys who were like the smartest back specialists in the world told me my career was over. At 43, I'm the heavyweight champ of the world. So that had never been given to a guy, I don't think, under 37 years old. At that time, no one had ever, for a first time, and it'll never be done. No one in their 40s, especially 43, was ever bestowed with that, you know, honor. And, you know, as you can imagine, I'm going to keep doing that, you know. Yeah. So, you know, it became part of my lifestyle, and I just worked it into my whole program. I was still lifting weights and went on to, you know, to develop, you know, write a book about it, and then do a DVD series, and then another DVD series. Hey, honey, I'm on the thing. You can't be banging like that, my love. You know, I'm on the podcast. You know, I went on to do the second DVD series, which lasted 5 years, and it's still selling out the ears. And we're about to, we just dropped the first DDP Yoga Now app, and that is that has just gotten like crazy rave reviews, because we're up on Google Play right now, and we're also up on ddpyoganow.com, and people can go on and try it and see it, because we give some sampler workouts and stuff, along with all the other amazing parts of the app that we put together. But we're still waiting on Apple. We're waiting on you know, iTunes, and we think that's going to come together in next week. So it's been pretty crazy, man. The lives that have been changed, including Jake the Snake Roberts and Scott Hall, you know, what's happened with their, you know, prospective lives.
Yeah, perfect perfect segue, because that's the second thing I was going to talk about, was the resurrection of Jake the Snake DVD that has been recently released. And I saw all types of independent festival, you know, honors and things like that. And it's a very great watch, and very, very intriguing, very poignant journey for Jake the Snake Roberts. So was it intended to create a DVD for his journey from the very beginning, or was it a matter of just having so much footage of his journey, of his successful journey, the highs and lows, that it was worth putting together and compiling for a DVD?
Well, first of all, it's not like you saw the movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not like we just threw footage together in a movie. You know, we were, you know, we made the long list or the Oscar, you know, consideration of 124. And if your story isn't like crazy intact, and the coloring and the footage. I mean, you can see we just didn't film that and threw a bunch of stuff together. Like, that's like, it's maybe one of the best documentaries. If we'd have had a bigger, you know, because you love what we do, but we also know that people who don't like wrestling, you know, like they go out of their way to dislike it. You know, they get aggravated for people for actually liking it. So if we would have been three golfers in the Resurrection of Jake the Snake, we'd have been up for the top 15. We might have even made it top five. But because it's wrestlers, it's just seen in a different light, which we accept. And our story's strong as hell. But we started, when I started working with Jake, I didn't name the movie. A friend of mine named Moser, I told him about I was going to have Jake, I was going to go down and see him, and I was going to work with him. And if he lost 20 pounds on his own, because he was over 300 pounds at the time. And Jake Roberts, I've never knew Jake Roberts to have an insane or any kind of work ethic except in the ring. I mean, his promos, he never had to think about his promos. He's like the most natural person ever. You know, it's not like he had to put a lot of work into it because he was just so smart. As far as wrestling, you know, the first 5 years of his career, as I know now, he was as stiff as any guy out there. But at some point, Jake got it. And when he got it at a whole different level. Okay. And since I knew him in 87 when he came into my nightclub in Fort Myers, Florida. But, you know, when I got to travel with him as a wrestler in 1991 or 90, so I think it was 91 when he came in for a couple months. And then going with him from that moment on and him taking me under his wing, I never knew him to have a work ethic in the gym. Like, none, zero. He'd show up, he'd do a couple reps, and he'd sit around and talk. So when it came down to him being as beat up and run down and the addict that he was, weighing over 300 pounds, there was no way I was moving him to Atlanta and moving him in my house and helping him on this journey if he couldn't do some of this on his own. So the deal, and we talk about it right in the beginning, you lose 20 pounds on your own, dude, and I'll move you up. And he did, like, way faster than I ever thought he would. But, you know, he saw it as his last shot. But when I was talking to my buddy Moser, telling him about how, and he had just seen Jake about 4 months earlier down in San Diego. I was living in L.A. for 10 years, and Jake was down there at a signing, and he was annihilated. I mean, he was so, you know, screwed up. He was like, "Are you really think you're going to be able to turn Jake Roberts? He's booze, pills, coke, and crack. You really think you're going to be able to turn his life around?" I said, "I don't know, dude. I know I'm going to try." He said, "It sounds like it could be the Resurrection of Jake the Snake." And I said, "That's the goal. That's the name of the movie." And we started filming from day one when me and Steve Yu, the director, went down there. And never knowing if we were ever going to do anything with it. And then when Jake finally got up here and we started putting together some really engaging storyline, you know, and we started it on YouTube because my goal was for Jake to see that it wasn't just me who cared. Like, there's millions of people out there, dude, to look up to you like you're a god. You know, and he don't want to be a god to anybody. But he, a guy who's an addict, you know, feels like no one cares anymore. You know, because a lot of people don't. Because you burnt so many bridges. And the only reason that I did it to start was, like you said earlier, I give a lot of props to Dusty Rhodes. I give all the props to Dusty Rhodes for giving me the breaks that really meant something. Yeah. Like, Dusty gave me every first break I ever had. He didn't give me the exact first one, but the ones that really meant something that I turned into something else, he was responsible for a lot of them. And when I went to Florida Championship Wrestling after the AWA, he took me under his wing and he taught me. He taught me about production. He taught me about storylines. I had a lot of really great ideas. In his words, I reminded him a lot of Jesse and Captain Lou and himself. And, he gave me the opportunity to he said, kid, I'm going to make you the Jesse Ventura of the 90s. And I was like, Dusty, I don't know a wrist lock for a wristwatch. You know, I can't possibly do color. He said, don't worry about it, baby. Gordon going to walk you through it all. And Gordon Soley, was next thing I know, I'm doing color with Gordon Soley. And figuring it out as I go along. And over a couple of years, I figured it out. But in the beginning, it was just pure energy. Dusty gave me all those breaks. For Jake, Jake was the first one to believe in me. That was one of the top guys of all time in the ring. He'd seen my work. He'd watched me. He knew my work ethic. And he got behind me when really nobody did. Dusty didn't even believe in me then as a worker. I'd already gone from wrestling manager to color commentator to wrestler, which is completely opposite. And Dream never believed in me as a wrestler until I tore my rotator cuff, got let go by Bill Watts, went and was on the road with Jake Roberts for 11 months. Three of them, he lived in my house. And like he said, when I tore my rotator cuff, I said, I can't wait to get in the ring with you and learn. He's like, D, you already know all the moves. You're going to learn more sitting on the couch and talking psychology than you will ever learn in the ring with me. You already know how to do all the moves. You just don't know when to do them, why you're doing them, and how to get the people to care. And when I came back 11 months later, and I had my, I was down the power plant the day before my meeting with Dusty, because Eric Bischoff had set me up a meeting to come in and meet with Dusty, and I had, I had a bunch of ideas. I always did. He knew that about me. And I was down the power plant, and he never was there. And when he seen me, he gave me a big hug. He goes, we got our meeting tomorrow, right? I said, yep. He said, jump in there with his kid. I want to see what he's got. So about 20 minutes, I worked with the kid, and I got done, got out of the ring, went to the other ring. And he stayed there that whole day. And next morning when I came in to meet him, he said, after we talked all our just catch-up, because we hadn't talked in a while, and he said, I know you always seen yourself as this main event superstar in our business. And I have to tell you, I never seen it. I just got to be honest with you, kid. I never seen it until yesterday. And it was like, like, holy, oh my God. I just got Dusty Rhodes approval that I actually am not hallucinating, that I could be a mid-card to main event player. So that was a really big day. But it came from all the knowledge I learned from Jake.
Yeah.
And I can remember, oh my God, because you're such a Dusty fan, I'll tell you this. I can remember Dusty used to be so mad at me that I would use his name and Jake's name in the same vein. Meaning the guys who helped me, like, big time. And I don't ever forget that. I don't ever forget who helped me. I know everyone who ever helped me. And I always go out of my way to help them back whenever I can. And it used to drive Dusty crazy. Because to Dusty, Jake, just ruined his life with the drugs. Just ruined his life. And that I would put him in the same verbiage in any instance, especially with psychology, anything. And Dusty was one of the greatest psychologists of our time, because who could go out there, the overweight person that he was, and just own the building? I don't care who's out there. from Ric Flair to Terry Funk to superstar Billy Graham. I don't care who it is. Like, they may be up to that spot, like Flair, because Flair is still his own animal. He's unbelievable. You know, superstar, that level that he was at. But nobody outshined Dusty Rhodes. Nobody. So it drove him a little crazy that I would put Jake in that same spot until one day I'm in L.A. and I get the call. And he said, you know, I'm writing my book, and I'm not having anybody write it for me. I'm going to write it myself. He said, and I sat down, and I've read your book 3 times. He says, it's a damn good book, D. You're proud of yourself. He said, and I understand now why you hold Jake Roberts in that respect. Hmm. And that was like, wow. He admitted that. Wow. That was pretty cool. So yeah. That's why I started this entire journey with Jake, because I wanted to help him like he helped me. Like, I'm not sitting in this big house in Atlanta, Georgia. There's probably no DDP yoga without Jake the Snake Roberts. So if you knew how many people I helped, it would flip you out. Like, you would never believe it. And I'm talking about people who have bought my program 3 years ago or 2 years ago or whatever it was for the $79 or whatever the hell the price was. Like, if people knew how close they could get to me by taking care of themselves, turning their lives around. I just did a workshop here at my DDP Yoga Performance Center. I stole that name from NXT Performance Center, the WWE Performance Center, because I thought that was amazing. But that's the name for the WWE Performance Center down there in Orlando, and it's its own animal. But where I'm at, it's the same thing but for fitness. And it's a performance center. It's not a yoga studio. I don't even do yoga. You know, DDP Yoga is its own animal for people who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga. But there's a really good chance that this place ain't even here. I mean, the power that one life touches is insane. And the movie, and you've seen it, you know you cried. You know those tears ran down your face. If Stone Cold Steve Austin put that on tape, you know the rest of the world, who even is a semi-wrestling fan, because it's just too real a story. And it's the way Steve, you put it together, because it all happened. We could have done a nine-hour miniseries and still missed a lot of stuff. And when you talk about the DVD, that will have all that on there. But the movie hasn't even launched. Like, no one's seen that movie, bro. Like, I'll bet you between the people who are you know, radio, you know, podcasts, radio people, TV people, and the maybe 14 screenings we did, maybe friggin' like 5,000 people have seen that movie, period. So yeah. We're literally a week away from pre-launching. And I said I wasn't even going to put this out there, but since we're talking about it, there will be I've already got the word from iTunes in a week from today, maybe 8 days, no more than that. We will be pre-selling, you know, people who come to want to see the movie, and it'll be on iTunes. We gave them an exclusive, and they can start. You know, we're going to encourage everybody. You know, anybody who's listening now, if you want to know exactly when it goes up on iTunes, go to JakeTheSnakeMovie.com, because if you sign up there, then you get all the information, like when the VOD is going to come out, when it's going to drop, when you can, you know, pre-sale buy it, you know, when you get the DVD, T-shirts, you know, the whole deal. But we've been putting this together for 3 years. This is a labor of love. And when people really get a chance to see it, and like I say, they can put, we're hoping that all of our wrestling people pre-get it, like before the day it goes on sale, so that iTunes go, oh my God, what the? Where did that come from? From a movie about three wrestlers? No, it's not a movie about three wrestlers. There just happens to be three wrestlers in it. It's about hope, love, and friendship. That's what that movie is about. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's interesting because, first of all, I'm glad you said something about that because I'm literally getting flooded with comments right now in the live stream about how to find it. So be sure to plug it again. But you know, it's interesting when I was watching the piece. I noticed that, and I've said this before, but it's just when Jake kept saying that he never felt good enough, you know, by his father. And
right.
I have the Jake Roberts DVD that came out from the WWE version that came out years ago. I have that too. And
right.
he talks about on that one too, and how he never felt, you know, good enough for his father. And you know, and he's such, you know, Jake is one of the best mic workers of all time, hands down.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting to relive, you know, I remember when I was a kid, you know, 25 years ago, you know, looking at that, looking at the psychology and just the how he can just totally immerse someone's attention with his words. You know, I think it was like a Tuesday Night Titans or something like that. He was talking about how, you know, you if you speak low, you know, they'll listen to you, and things like that. Just the psychology and the Saturday Night's Main Event, you know, when he had the snake with Mean Gene Oakland, you know, this the things like that. But the, on the flip side of that, it's like we see that with a lot of wrestlers, and we see that with a lot of actors as well. How, you know, they tend to go to booze and to alcohol. I mean, and to like cocaine and things like that, because they are so immersed in their character that they forget who they are. And I think that is what I saw a whole lot with Jake, just being surprised that he had, you know, $7,000, you know, in one night, you know, part of you know, the DVD. So just being surprised about that, and it was good to see that with the account and things like that, and just really understanding that just because someone's a professional wrestler doesn't mean that they have it all together, you know, and it's important to realize that that's probably my biggest takeaway from the movie, just for people to realize that, you know, wrestlers need love too, you know, in a sense, because they're so big into their character a lot that they lose themselves, and it's so good to see someone like Jake Roberts, you know, find himself again.
You know, one of the things that I've learned, because I'm right up next to it, and I am all the time, from Scott to Jake to countless other guys. The thing is, because of what happened early on in their life, whether it was a little kid or someone in their 20s or whatever it is, mm-hmm. the story you tell yourself is who we are. And when you don't like the story of who you are or how you grow up, a lot of actors, comedians, wrestlers find that character they want to be, and then they start building that.
Yep.
No one did it better than Jake or Scott. You know, Scott was not comfortable being Scott Hall, you know, big Scott Hall with the blonde hair and the walrus mustache. He wasn't comfortable. He was comfortable getting within the character that became Razor Ramon, but I created that whole look from A to Z, from the black hair to the losing the mustache to the, you know, the 5 o'clock shadow. You know, before Razor Ramon, he was the diamond stud. And driving around in my 62 pink Cadillac, as we drive to, and I was managing him, we drive to Gainesville, Georgia. We drive to, you know, Florence, South Carolina, or wherever the town, Columbus, South Carolina. We, you know, we drove 300 miles in and around the area all the time back in those days. And Razor was Ramon was born in the pink Cadillac doing Tony Montana. And then by the time he finally, a year and a half later, ended up in New York, Razor Ramon was born. But he was, all the embryonic stuff started in my 62 pink Cadillac. And Scott will be the first person to tell you that. And that's one of the only reasons that we had success with him here, is because anytime that, and he says it in the movie, people don't really know how tight we've been over the last 25 years. His son Cody is 24 right now and will be coming home from New Japan on the 20th. Well, when Scott called me, you know, pleading to help him to get a job because nobody will return his phone call, and I say to him, I say, what, you know, what if we change your whole look? Are you good with that? He said, I'll do whatever it takes to get a job, bro. My wife's pregnant, by the way, with Cody. All right, it's just 25 years ago, man, and we're on that journey. And now what's really crazy is Cody comes back on the 20th. The WWE's been doing a Legends story about me. They filmed me for like 2 days. And we stopped filming it over a year ago because they wanted to have the performance center, the DDP Yoga Performance Center, and they wanted it finished. So as it turns out, now we're all done and open and killing it. And they're going to come down and interview me for the rest of my story. Plus, they're going to interview Scott for the one they've done on him. And they want to get pieces of Cody and Scott and me and Scott at the performance center. So it's really crazy the way things work out, you know. But both of those guys were lost in their own story. Jake and I can't tell you how many interviews we did because people just couldn't believe that I took him into my home, you know, and all the demons that he had and everything went through. And I took Scott in too. And that just blew the story up even more. But it got both of those guys to see how much the people really care about them. Because, again, they didn't care about themselves. Why should you? So what you have to do is put that respect back in somebody's life. You got to show them that there is a reason to fight back. There is a, like, my goal, my only goal starting this was to help Jake get as straight as I could get him, never knowing where it was going to go. My goal was to get him as straight as I could get him so that he could walk away from the world, the wrestling world that he loves, with his head held high. I mean, you could take the top 10 guys of all time in our business, Dusty Rhodes absolutely being one of them, Ric Flair absolutely, Hulk Hogan, Jake Roberts. You know, you could take the top 10 guys of our business in the last 50 years. And Jake, and those top 10 guys are pretty interchangeable as top 5 guys. And pretty much Jake Roberts on that list every time. So, you know, Jericho says it in the movie. It was like just only a matter of time once Jake started getting straight, you know, that he would go into the Hall of Fame. And Jericho said, and a future Hall of Famer saying this as well, you know, saying, because Jake Roberts is the Hall of Fame. Like, he is. So the wrestling fans all know that he got, you know, put in the Hall of Fame, and I got to induct him. But I want you to think of the odds of that. When I started with Jake in August of 2011, that less than 2 years later, in this, really 18 months later, in the same house, in the same year, both him and Scott not only got sober, but started to really turn their lives around and got inducted in the Hall of Fame. What do you think the odds would have been on that starting out? 1 billion to 1?
If that.
Yeah, you know? Like, no one, when I told Steve Austin, like, I know you got a family-friendly show, so I can't even tell you what he told me, but he went off of me like, are you beep, beep, beep crazy? You know, and then when he heard Scott was coming in, which is really like 2 or 3 months later, Scott came in. Now he really thought I was out of my mind. You know, but, you know, pretty much everybody thought I was out of my mind when I became a wrestler at 35. I mean, Michael P.S. Hayes fell down on the ground laughing, like belly laughing. You know, everyone thought I was out of my mind when not only I started doing yoga and when all the specialists said I was done, over, my career's over, but I came back. And not only came back, but became world champion. Like, then they, wow, like, whoa. But then when I came up with my own yoga, that, you know, for people who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga. Yeah, like, let's, like, there's 20 million people that do yoga. I could have easily gotten into that market and been a serious guru. But that's not who I am. I'm the guy who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga. So I'm not going to take that path everybody's on. I've always been the guy who takes the path less traveled. But in this case, there really wasn't even a path. There was just a forest. And I got a bulldozer. I knocked down one tree at a time. And 4 years later, we've had over 188,000 people invest in DDP yoga. That means
including myself.
Right, you know, because you know it works. And I never developed it for weight loss. I developed it for what helped you, your back, you know, to heal your body, you know.
Yeah. You talk about the road less traveled, and, you know, no one, and you said it, you know, earlier in the show, no one has started their career at 35 and, you know, has reached their zenith, you know, in their early to mid 40s, you know, that no one could say that as far as, you know, WCW is concerned. Now, you know, we have people like Nick Bonkwinkle, people like that, you know, in AWA that, you know, started their, really peaked, not started, but kind of peaked in their 40s and started to become over as a main eventer. But it's definitely the road less traveled, like you said. So between, you know, in that road to become WCW World Heavyweight Champion like you did, what are some big takeaways that you've learned, you know, just as far as your road? When you started, you know, I'm sure that you had in mind, you know, I want to be world champion. I would think that whoever doesn't
wrestling. I didn't even. But I didn't, because here, my only goal was to get to the mid card. Because I was, you know, I'm 42 years old. I mean, I'm 35 and a half years old starting. I'm hoping to wrestle maybe to 40, like hoping to get that far. And at one point when I was 38 years old, and Dusty, again, he would let me, where Dusty was just so pivotal, he would let me vent. Like, he would let me just, like, because nobody in that booking committee believed in me. Nobody. And he wasn't on the booking committee anymore. He wasn't the booker, because he wasn't going to take no committee anyway. It's either Dusty's way or no way. And, you know, they put him out the pasture, though. They sure weren't going to, you know, pay him, you know, give him his contract and let him go work for Vince. So they'll pay him to stay home. You know, that's how that works. You know, take someone off the shelf. Don't let Dusty Rhodes go down there and bury you. You know, so Dusty was on, you know, on payroll, sitting at home. It drove him crazy. But so he loved doing anything that I wanted to do, you know, or talk about or whatever, because he was in the mix of everything. But for me, he was always in the mix. And then one day I was on that rant of complaining, even past venting. I'm complaining now. And I'm going, listen, Dusty, I know I'm never going to be you or Rick or Hogan. You know, I know I'm never going to be the world champion, but they won't give me that. Dennis, she just said, shut up. And he never said that to me. I must have done such a, he hated what I just said. And he said, what did you just say? I said, well, you know, Dream, if I would have started when I was 22 and I kept going, you know, maybe I would have had a shot to be you or Rick or Hogan, but I didn't. So I'm never going to be that guy. He goes, no. What did you say after that? I said, well, Dream, they're never going to put the world title on me. And he said, then what the hell are you doing it for? Dallas, he said, you are a man that's always going after everything, and you've taken it and got it.
if you don't believe that you could become the world champion, you need to get the hell out of our business right now.
There you go.
And I swear to God, there was a yellow ledger pad next to my phone. I grabbed the pen while I was talking to him, but he was still cutting a promo on me. I wrote down, I will be the world champion in 5 years or less.
Nice.
That was like November 26. It was 4 years, 4 months, and 14 days later. I raised that belt over my head in a four-way dance with three of maybe the top guys of all time, Hogan, Flair, and Sting, and the Macho Man handing me the world title. You don't get any more, this is your time, than that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. You don't get any more, you know, than that.
And I remember watching that match, like, you know, very vividly, you know, on WCW, and it was great, you know, and it was interesting too, because you were the underdog, but you weren't the outcast, you know, in that match, as far as what I thought, you know, you fit in. I think you built yourself. You know, and it was you got over with the crowd. You know, it was that whole people's champion thing. You know, that you had. So, I think that you were like the WCW's version of The Rock when it came to that, as far as, you know, being the people's champion in a sense. Especially when you defied, you know, you were one of the only top players that didn't jump ship, you know, to the NWO.
Right.
And when you put that T-shirt on, you know, and shook Scott Hall's hand and just yanked him over straight to a diamond cutter, was I marked out. I remember that. I marked out. Yeah, that was absolutely incredible.
And I talk about it in the movie because, mm-hmm. you know, those guys, I mean, I brought that idea to Kevin Nash. Like, if you saw an angle with me on TV, you can pretty much bet I came up with it, because, you know, no one was going to take the time to think for me or to put me in that spot. So I had to do it. And I didn't go to Eric Bischoff about that. I went to Kevin Nash, who, when Kevin Nash accepted his honor of Hall of Famer, he said in his speech that if it wasn't for me, he may not be there. Because there was times where he wanted to go, okay, I'm done. And I'd be there, big man, don't let them beat you. Don't let them take you out. When he was Vinny Vegas, I would tell him, you are going to be one of the biggest names in our business. Don't let them beat you. And he put, I couldn't believe, I know Kev really well, but I couldn't believe he put it over in his speech because I didn't see that coming. And yeah, you know, I got chills on that. And then Kev, yeah, I already told you the Scott Hall story. You know, when his wife was pregnant with her son Cody, you know, I got him in, I made the job, I made everything happen. Now those two guys, I go to Kevin, I tell him that whole idea that you know what happened. And he said, I love it. He goes, I want to take the diamond cutter too. He goes, I think this will be a huge pop. It'll be insane. I go, dude, Bischoff's never going to let you take the diamond cutter. Let me go ask Scott. He goes, go tell Bischoff. He goes, Scott wants to go. You don't think he don't want to help you? You know, we need people to wrestle against, man. He goes, he don't forget what you did for him. He said, go tell Bischoff. I said, I'm not telling Bischoff until I ask Scott, because I just respect. So I went to Scott. I asked him. He goes, I love it. He goes, let's hit Bischoff tonight. And we were at the bar. And, there, you know, Kev was like, yo, you tell him. I'm like, no, you tell him. I'm not telling Bischoff this idea. You tell him. So we walked over, you know, started having some beers, and Kevin told him about it. And Bischoff's like, I don't know. Because if you remember, no one got to them. No one got to the NWO. And they were the NWO. Of course, Hulk gave it the super blazing quasar that just took it to the next evolution, but those two guys were the NWO. They killed everybody. Nobody touched them yet. Nobody. And when Bischoff's like, I don't know. And Scott goes, you know, everybody knows you two guys are boys. Like, we came up together, me and Bischoff, you know, but he would never, like, give me that, like, push in that spot. He'd protect me, which I didn't really appreciate until I got to the WWE. But he really did. He protected me in a lot of different scenarios where guys were trying to screw me. But he'd never give me that spot, like where it was his idea. And he said, I'm not really sure. And Bischoff goes, Scott Hall goes, we all know you guys, everybody knows you guys are boys. He goes, so you're best friends. He goes, and you're telling me that you're best friend and you don't want to help him? He goes, I'm not sure if I want to work here. And I just looked at Scott and like, wow, that was strong, because it came out of nowhere, you know? And
what would it put you over?
You know, well, you know, they put it on the TV. Now, here's the other side of it. They put that whole angle on the TV. And for 8 weeks in a row, for some reason or another, they took it off. So it got to the point, me and Big Show ran together for 3 years. Like, the whole time he was, as soon as he started, I got him ready for Hogan. That's how I really got to know Show, because I was down the power plant, because they weren't doing anything with me. You know, when I came back, when I got my job back, you know, at 37 years old, they didn't do anything with me. So I figure if we don't put you on the road and you don't do any house shows, you don't do TV except for once in a while, well, he'll stay garbage. But they didn't realize I was going to go down the power plant and work out every single day, be the first to come and the last to leave. They didn't count on that. So I kept getting a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And I trained Big Show down there, and me and him, we rode on the hundreds of thousands of miles together. And I can remember that ninth week, it wasn't even on the sheets. Wasn't even on the sheets. And Show's like, dude, you need to go to New York. You need to go to WWF. He goes, that's where I'm going. I'm done with here. That's where I'm going. He goes, you need to go there. He goes, you're ready. He goes, but they ain't ever going to give you the break here. And the next week, it was in New Orleans. And, I mean, I was ready to leave. And I was asking for my release. And next thing you know, it's live. I got 12 minutes. And I'm shooting the match, shooting the angle, the whole thing. And, of course, by the time I got to the curtain, I was down to 4 minutes. Like, trying to cut me down, like, setting me up to fail. But you couldn't set that angle. They chopped it on time, and they didn't really care. Bottom line is, that's all the time we needed. And now, let me ask you, just to give backbone to the story I just told you, if Stone Cold Steve Austin, in 1997, I was about to be in a very similar position. Now, this is right in the beginning of 1997. So if Steve Austin does something to Vince McMahon at the 9 o'clock hour, between the 9 o'clock hour and when he's going to show up again at the end of the show, how many times do you think they'd play that?
Countless.
Right. How many times do you think, 9 o'clock hour, I'd hit Scott Hall with the diamond cutter and backdrop Kevin Nash over the top rope and took off through the crowd? How many times do you think they played that back?
Probably not enough.
How about none?
Oh, wow.
So, again, any time that happened to me, turned out to be the best thing that happened to me. Because people want to, you know, hang in areas, oh, they tried to screw me, and this is so bad, and this is going, all the negativity. I don't ever fall for that. I might fall for it for an hour or two, but you can bet I'm going to turn it around and I'm going to find the positive in everything that they did. And I'm going to make it work. So if you ask me what I took away. But if you ask me what I took away from it, don't let anybody hold you down. Don't let anybody tell you what you can't do. One of my favorite quotes, it was actually, I've got a lot of them. I'm going to give you all three of them. If you say you can or you say you can't, you're right. You know who said that?
No.
Henry Ford. But okay. What did he ever do? Next one is the repetitions of affirmations leads to belief. And once that belief becomes a deep conviction, things begin to happen. Trust me, you know exactly who that is, but you don't know he said it like that. But I'll tell you the one thing he said over and over and over again, and it's going to ring in your head, everybody who's listening right now, because everybody's heard him say it over and over. The repetition of affirmations leads to belief. And once that belief becomes a deep conviction, things begin to happen. I'm the greatest. I am the greatest of all time. I am the greatest. Muhammad Ali had been saying, I am the greatest since he was a kid. And he said it right on up to the time he couldn't talk anymore. And the bottom line is, in the 1900s, when they picked the top 100 athletes of all time, he's number one. Now, was he the greatest athlete of all time? As far as I'm concerned, in the record books, it says Muhammad Ali, the greatest, the number one athlete. And the last thing I'll leave you with this, and this is Einstein who said this. He said, it's not that I'm so smart. It's just I stick with the problem longer.
Very, very interesting stuff there. Very very philosophical. We just had a moment of philosophy with Diamond Dallas Page, which is very awesome. As you were talking and as you were speaking about not getting a break, I thought about just how much money that you and Rock could have drawn in the WWE.
Ah!
That never came about.
Oh, ridiculous. You know, and I'll leave you with that last story because, first of all, I'm the biggest Rock fan on the planet. I love that he's the biggest star in the world right now because he's one of us. Met him in 2000. No, I think it was 1999, right? It was 1999 or 2000. It was 2 years before I came in. Me and Big Show, they were wrestling in Canada. We had a pay-per-view in Canada. And so we were up there the night earlier. I went to the show, which nobody ever did. No one ever goes to the other guy's show, WCW or WWF, unless you're looking for a job. I wasn't looking for a job. I just signed a multi-million-dollar deal. I wasn't going anywhere. After the show, me and I always called him G, Giant. Me and G were leaving, getting ready to leave the building, and he goes, "You want to meet The Rock?" I had to grab my bag. I said, "Sure, I'd love to." We walked in the locker room. Rock was there. We had a great talk. Very humble. Rock has that ability to make you feel like you're the only person in the room. He always has had that, I'm guessing, because I was quite a step or two over him at that time. But Jake had told me to keep an eye on him because he said he's going to be a huge star in our business. And that's when he was booked in 96, and he was Rocky Maivia. But he saw something in him. He said, this gimmick he's got right now is lame. He said, but at some point, he'll break away from this, and he's going to become a huge star in the business. He said the same thing about Austin when he was the ring bearer or ring master, whatever he was. And he said the same thing about me when I tore my rotator cuff, and I told him I needed him to mentor me and help me in the ring. He told me I was going to be one of the best in the business. He said, if you keep doing what you're doing. So I told Rock that story. And he's like, well, you know, Rock, you know, Jake's got a great eye for talent. And I said, you know, so I've been really, like, watching your career, and I love what's happening with it, especially now. I caught you on some show, and you were, and during your interview, you were being yourself, but then you became The Rock. And you bounced back to yourself, and then you became The Rock. And I said, that was really entertaining, man. I'm really going to have a lot of fun watching you. And we shook hands, and as I'm walking out, and I'm almost down the hallway, I hear, hey, Diamond. As Big Show gets out of my way, I can see in the far corner of that locker room, The Rock is putting on, remember we had those sideburns and those big, so those, the $1,500 Versace shirts, and I know they were $1,500 because I bought a couple of them. So he says to me, and I can see he's rolling in the character. Here it comes. He goes, you know, there's only one people's champion. And Big Show just about blew his guts out. He laughed so hard. And I just stared at him. And I bet you I didn't say anything for 15 seconds. I just stared at him. And I said, you know, Rock, you're right. And you, my friend, well, you're looking at him. Oh, and I was out the door. And Show went, oh, my God. Oh, my God, you stuffed him. Nobody stuffs him. And that night we went out and got really drunk. I had a great time. I came home. I was still with Kimberly at the time. I woke her up, and I made her listen to me tell her how I was going to show up in the WWF. First of all, she thought I was so drunk because I just signed a multi-million-dollar deal. You're not going anywhere. I'm like, listen, this isn't now, but I am going to work at WrestleMania. I am going to end my career in the WWF. That's just the way it is. I've never seen it any other way. And I said, here's what's going to happen. They're going to cut all the lights in the building. And everybody's going to be, for sure, it's Jericho. But it's going to go 15, 20, 30 seconds. No one says anything. And, you know, people are grumbling. And Jim Ross, hold on, don't change the channel. We've got some technical difficulty here. And then for the first time ever in a WWF arena, you hear my voice. Blacked out building. Who's the real people's champion? Spotlight hits me. You're looking at him. Throw up the diamond cutter, bang, boom, 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 boom. I would have got boos and I would have got cheers out of the building. I told Kim at the time, I said, Rock's going to be, you know, he'll be hurt. He'll be out, so he can't answer my challenge. Maybe he's doing a movie. Who knows? I go, but that's how it's going to be. I'll go to the ring. I'll cut this promo on him, and I'll just, you know, I'll get on a rant until he gets there, and then we'll start our promos. They'll be unbelievable. So that was an idea 2 years almost to the day that I show up at Vince McMahon's office. Like, in my mind, we're not doing any other idea except for this. Like, that's what they want me to come for. I've never been, you know, I've got an amazing reputation. I'll do business with anybody. I don't care about doing the job as long as we do it right. I mean, this is my unbelievable. Everything's coming to fruition. Oh, my God, it's happening again. Again, it's not that I'm so smart. It's just I stick with the problem longer. Like, this, everything I've laid out, this is going to be my way in. And then when I get that whole stalker idea. And they were so adamant about it. And there's two things where I screwed up on. One was, I didn't go, that's a great idea, but this is what I'm going to do. Like, when you want to do this, you know, this is what's going to, I didn't sell it, and it wouldn't have mattered, but for me personally, I sort of like, here's an idea I have. No, it's like, no, here's the idea. The second thing, so it derailed my first goal ever that, I mean, dude, I've hit every goal I've ever had in my life, if not exactly a really close version of it. And this is the first time I ever let anybody, like, shift me. And the thing I really learned, because what I should have done was got up from the table, thank Vince, thank Shane for the opportunity. What an amazing opportunity. Thank you so much for this idea. But that's not who I am. If you want me to draw money with you here, when you're ready to do People's Champion versus People's Champion, give me a call. But in my mind, I was 45 and a half years old in my body. So I was owed $1.2 million and change. I left $498,000 on the table to go to the WWE. Because WCW, unless I bring in, you know, if I wanted to get paid, I had to stay there. They would have given me the buyout to save money. But I didn't care because I thought I was going to make millions of dollars in the WWE. That's what I thought. I knew the way those guys were paid. They got a bottom, but that was their bottom pay. You know, that's the worst they could do. And I didn't freaking get up and walk away from the table. If I had done that, I probably wouldn't have made it to the elevator. They would have called me back and go, okay, here's what we're going to do. You know, bottom line is I didn't do that. So that ate at me for a while. So when I was going through what wasn't the best time of my career, and I really couldn't control anything, thank God I got to work with Christian at the end. I had that really great match at WrestleMania to be able to walk away from, because today I'm getting my best push ever with the WWE, like best push ever. I mean, I've hosted all three Best of Nitros. You know, I'm at all the things that they do, from the Raws to the Best of Raw, the, you know, the 1,000 episode, I'm there. They bring me in everything. They give me a damn infomercial in the back the night that Jake shows up when no one's seen him in 16 years, and then they let me induct Jake in the Hall of Fame and put me in a Royal Rumble and let me hit diamond cutters on everybody. Like, I'm getting the best push ever from the WWE at 59 and a half years young.
That's a good point.
But, you know, and that's what I focus on. And here's what Vince McMahon gave me that day. Because Vince was all about business to Vince. And the business wasn't drawing money. The business was, okay, we're going to show everybody this is top dog in WCW, and this is a top dog in the WWF. Now we're going to beat him down, and our babyface ain't ever going to sell anything. You know, because we almost shut them down. And I will guarantee you, if I was to go back, if it could have been like 5 years ago instead of 12 years ago, if it could have been last year, if Taker and I were to go out there today, then I couldn't run with him today. But take us back at the same time, years later, Mark and I would have we'd have stole the show. We'd have had unbelievable chemistry. But there was, you know, there was things in the way. You know, and they are what they are. So what did I learn from that? You can never be afraid to walk away from the table if you believe in yourself. Now let's go to Shark Tank. You brought it up at the beginning of the day, or beginning of the show. Shark Tank, I went through 5 interviews to get on that show, from the phone call to the Skype to the video to the written contract, which is 27 pages. And my business partner and I filled everything out, did everything. And I realized these guys want to control me over this between now and it airs, and a year after it airs. Like, only I had to run everything by them. So after a bunch of, you know, after a while of deliberating, you know, how important this was to the company, I told my business partner, Steve Yu, who's the director of the Resurrection Jake the Snake, I told him, I said, write Shark Tank, send him an email. Thank them so much for the opportunity. Tell them we love the show, but we're going to pass. He's like, what? Dude, we just spent 2 years working on this. What do you mean we're going to pass? I said, you got to trust me here, dude. If this is supposed to happen, it'll happen the way we want it to. We can't be asking these guys if we can put YouTubes up and, you know, if I'm going to be on Fox Sports on some, you know, in Charlotte, South Carolina, or Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, we got to call them up and ask them, you got to give ABC first right. I'm not doing any of that. Tell them we're passing. 90 minutes later, the executive producer calls me back. How do we fix this? 3 contracts I said no to before I signed one. And we went on that show for $200,000. I didn't want any money because I wanted to do a dollar, and they all fought about it, but that's besides the point. Bottom line is we won that show for $200,000. We didn't get a deal. A lot of people felt bad for me. Just so you know, the app that I have produced is closer to $1 million on 5 different platforms. The iPhone, the iPad, the web, the Droid, and the tablet. It's all paid for. The building that's $2.3 million, that's 6,300 square feet, which is a production studio, It's for cooking shows, our workouts, and a 30-foot green screen. It's got 20-foot we can add up to the floor and 16 feet high, 5 edit bays, conference, showers, locker rooms, $2.3 million, all paid for. It's the house that Shark Tank built. It's nice. The app that Shark Tank built. So I learned you have to take control of your own destiny. Don't let anyone tell you what you can or can't do. It'll keep going back to that. And I'm just going to leave here on this because I got to go up early tomorrow. JakeTheSnakeMovie.com. We will doing pre-sales next week. Maybe it's Tuesday or Wednesday. It'll be one of those days. We'll be up there. We're sending an email out to everyone. We know the exact day because we want to blow iTunes away. We were giving them the exclusive. We want to. They put us in the top 124 consideration for the Oscar, which is pretty cool. You know, a lot of people thought that would never happen, but we did. Out of 5,000 some odd documentaries, we were in our top 124. Now I want to show the world that the wrestling people, because they got behind Jake, like they got behind Jake for you know his shoulder. They got behind Scott for their hip. There are 30, I think it's about maybe it's 2,200. I'm not sure the exact number, but when you get to the end of the movie, did you see all those names up there?
Mm.
Did you see that? All those thousands of names.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Those are the people who helped Jake and Scott. That's who all those names are. So if you're listening and you did get a picture from Jake or a t-shirt from Scott or a call or whatever, look for your name. It's up there. And when we send out the DVDs, when we start to put the DVDs for sale, the people who are the ones who put up and for a DVD, they will get them. My goal is for them to get them a day ahead of everybody else because the VOD will already be out there. But what we're going to put on the DVDs, like we've got hours of footage. Jake, me, and Steve Hughes, the director, you know, they do the thing at the end of the director's cut and they sit around and talk about the movie. Mm-hmm. Well, we did that the other day and tell me this could have ever happened in a million years. That 3 years after Jake Roberts comes into my house to turn his life around, or what I would call the accountability crib, that not only he would develop his own spoken, unspoken word, as he calls it, comedy tour, where he toured 20 different places, sold them out in Canada, but he does it all over the country. Does his own, you know, it's unspoken word. It's thought-provoking. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you cry. It'll inspire you. It's Jake telling locker room stories that are just off the hook. But right now, I don't know if you know it, but there's another wrestling organization. It's never going to rival the WWE. You know, Jake actually has the blessings of the WWE to actually go there. And you know, because we asked before he ever did anything, like, make sure you tell WWE everything before you go to making any kind of deals with anybody. But there is a new federation that's going to help the boys out and keep them working in Vegas. And I don't want to give all the, you know, the information way because it's not mine to do, it's Jake's too. But Jake is like the head writer. So at 60 years old, his life is beginning all over again.
Yeah, because
he got sober, he got his clarity, and, you know, I just hope he keeps doing it one day after the other. It's one day at a time. So you really want to see the movie The Resurrection of Jake the Snake? Go sign up at JakeTheSnakeMovie.com. You want to see what DDP Yoga is all about? Well, there's no easier way than right now. Go to DDPYogaNow.com, and you can actually sign up and get online and get the app because we give it out for free. But to get the stuff that's a subscription are all the workouts and stuff, but we give samplers of them. And when you see how interactive, this is like a game where you get, if you do your workout, you get X amount. Now, that you get to do the workout, you actually have the, your heart rate monitor built up and everything. You don't want to get short workouts on, you know, for free because it's a sampler. But if you got the program, you got the workout, you get X amount of points for staying in your fat burning zone if you wear your heart monitor. If you got a Bluetooth heart monitor, you get double the points. And then we do it for pictures and measurements, and we make this thing so fun, it'll blow your mind. Because now you must have got a letter because you bought the program, you invested in it. You must have got a letter telling you got 30 days free of the app. Did you get that?
I probably did. I get so many emails that I don't check all of them.
Now, you might want to go back and look at that one because that's 30 days free on the app, bro. Now, and when you see it, Are you a Droid or are you an Apple guy?
Droid.
Okay, well, it's up there now because we got people at, you know, on Google Play and you know, the app is, I'm not even promoting it right now because I'm waiting for it to come up on iTunes, and they've been jerking us around a little bit on that, so we're just waiting for that to all clear up, and as soon as that happens, then I'm going to be pushing it everywhere. Because I want everybody on all levels. And coming the end of January to the app will be the first ever DDP video wake-up alarm clock where I come knocking on the screen of your phone or your tablet or your iPad going, yo, monkey, get out of bed. Get on the mat. Don't make me come in there. You know, there's a bunch of stuff. There's stuff I've done with Jake and Scott and all sorts of stuff. That'll be coming at the end of January. But that's going to be pretty funny and inspiring. All right, my friend, that's all I got.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. It's been a pleasure. And, yeah, I totally agree with you as far as, you know, knowing your path and sticking with it. I personally am in my PhD program, about to become a doctor. So that is
awesome.
Thank you, man.
God bless you,
appreciate
man.
It.
Tremendous.
Thank you very much. And thank you so much, DDP. Great time speaking with you, and have a great night, man.
You too, buddy. See ya.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, hosted by Chris Featherstone and Derek of Crave Wrestling. This is the new Tuesday Night Titans.
Wow, ladies and gentlemen, the Diamond Dallas Page graced the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. What an awesome time speaking with him, Derek.
You know what? And again, ladies and gentlemen, Diamond Dallas Page was here tonight. He gave us full commentary of what's expected out of the DVD. Once you see it, get it on iTunes. Diamond Dallas Page has gained 16 billion customers just for being on the show tonight.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
He's got so many people that are just going to, everybody, the chat room's blown up. They want to know where to find it. Absolutely marvelous. And he was here with us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Diamond Dallas Page. He was here to celebrate Pancake and Power Slam, the best place to be on Tuesday night. And it's a shame that we now have to talk about Monday Night Raw and stuff like that because we're on such a high note with DDP.
Exactly.
But Chris Featherstone brought me here and Pancake and Power Slam studio. We're alight. We're just so full of energy now. That was absolutely marvelous. Chris, great
absolutely.
Job. Great job, as always.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. So let's create a fun, healthy balance with Raw talk. We're just gonna go skim through Raw for time's sake. But I got a load of TLC questions from the history of TLC. We're gonna spend probably about 90 seconds just kind of reliving the NWO, Scott Hall's debut. He spoke a lot about Scott Hall, and you know I did watch. DVD, it's great. His PR rep sent me the DVD as, you know, many from a media standpoint, from a PR standpoint, you know, I got the pleasure to watch it before it came out and was really released in lots. So it was great. Very, very great, poignant DVD, like I said before. All right, so here we go. TLC questions. Who defeated Sheamus in a chairs match at TLC 2012? Who defeated Sheamus in a chairs match at TLC 2012? All right, real quick, Raw. We got the League of Nations in-ring promos in Charleston, South Carolina. Interrupted by Wyatt Family, then the Nadellis, then Dreamer. We officially have four big stables, four-man stables in the WWE right now. Very interesting there. Rhino's introduced. Interesting introduction, but at the same time, you know, he's been on NXT for months, so it wasn't huge. But he fits a little bit more than Spike. I'd prefer it to be Spike, but Rhino fits a little bit more as far as like a big man to kind of counter the Wyatt Family. So, you know, it made sense. The Family, Roman Reigns, Ambrose, and the Usos defeats the League of Nations, Wyatt Family, and Team Extreme or the Extreme Army. I heard both of those on Raw. Four-way elimination match, which for some reason to me, I think that should have been I would have preferred that to be the main event of TLC. I don't think there should be a title match at TLC. We gotta make it quick because we got predictions coming up too. But Kevin Owens defeating Dolph Ziggler, very good match. Ambrose coming out and throwing soda and popcorn in Owens' face, very interesting there. Naomi and Sasha Banks defeating Alicia Fox and Brie Bella, and then a New Day appears and graces and gifts and endows Team Bad with unicorns and just a random dancing, you know, in the ring, all six of them. And it was by far to me the best moment of Raw, one of the best moments all year. That was absolutely incredibly funny to me. Lucha Dragons defeating the New Day. Got some distraction from the Usos there. And then the Miz TV with Charlotte and Ric Flair, interrupted by Paige. So weird. So confusing. Who is the heel here? Who's the babyface? Who's the heel? How in the world am I supposed to be attached to a character and the WWE can't even find out how to develop him right? Just read my article on WAWNation.com about NXT, about Raw and SmackDown needing to take the NXT template as far as old-school booking, developing characters very well. It's a very good read, if I may say so myself. Please go to WAWNation.com if you're listening through iTunes or through Facebook, through Twitter, through WAWNation live stream. Please go there and look at my article about that. But, yeah, just I don't know who to attach myself to because both of them are heelish, and it just didn't make sense at all to me. Ryback and Rusev, I have no idea why they're trying to make another angle from this. It doesn't make sense to me at all. Jack Swagger and Stardust, you got that brother Del Rio working with him. How is anyone going to believe that Swagger is going to be United States champion? The U.S. Championship was one of the best titles to watch the past 6-8 months. And then all of a sudden, it just flounders again. It just ridiculous. Strowman defeating Dreamer, and then Roman Reigns and Sheamus segment, which is just painful to watch. As a Roman's apologist and a Roman Reigns fan myself, it was painful to watch because it just seems so scripted, especially on, well, both of them. It just seems like they both were reading from a monologue. And it was so painful to watch and just not very exciting at all to really excite me for TLC this weekend. So Big Show is the correct answer. Good job. Before we get your thoughts on that, Derek, next question is who won the Intercontinental title at TLC 2014? And we'll also have loads of TLC trivia next week. So what are your thoughts on that, Derek?
Thoughts on that was, you know, they have all these factions now. Where was that when Survivor Series was going on? That would have made more sense to have something like that. Survivor Series, broken record, Ziggler and Owens was great. With the ECW people coming back, again, Rhino, he's been there. He's WWE affiliated. Kind of a waste. I mean, why not bring Mikey Whipwreck back? Remember him?
I do.
But It would work. Spike Dudley would be a lot more fun. I almost thought it would be Rob Van Dam, but it wasn't, which, again, it would get the same response as Rhino. And the Roman Reigns last night, Sheamus, that was the worst ending to Raw I have ever, ever seen. It was so boring. And it was, again, you get this thing where it's scriptwritten. I mean, he calls him Tater Tots, and then he gives his fake, forget about it.
Right.
Roman Reigns, you've dropped a few pegs in my, I'm over it. Sheamus and Reigns have no business being together. The whole thing was just an absolute schmoz. There was 15 minutes of nothing, and they just kind of punch each other a couple times. Well, you got to get rid of this chair. You got to get rid of that table. Get in there and do something. I mean, it was wasted time. It was filler. It was like watching a Divas match is what I'm going to compare it to because that's what it was like.
Yeah,
garbage. Monday Night Football, I'm almost getting tired of it.
Yeah, it was rough. It was so rough. And here's the problem. You know, I think it's about that time now where Roman Reigns, if Roman Reigns is the guy, and if Roman Reigns is listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam show this week, here's the thing. It's time for Roman Reigns to say something, to step up and say something, because the John Cena template is what lost, you know, 10, 15 million viewers. And I'm going to be honest with you. It's true. The John Cena template is the wrong template to be booking and to be getting people over effectively, period. John Cena was force-fed to us. He got over because the WWE put him over. You know, we had to put up with it because we still love wrestling, so we had no other choice. You know, out of the, 15 million people watching, 15 to 20 million people watching WWE and WCW, 15 years ago, 15, 17, 18 years ago, you've got three, if that, watching now. So the John Cena template is what hurt the WWE. We're going to give you this guy, and we're going to give him to you, no matter how you like it or not. It should be, I understand the homegrown talent. I understand, this guy being the guy. But we've said it many times on this show, and I will just continue to reiterate it. It's you have to have a number of guys. You have to have people come out of the pack to become the top guy. You just have to. And if the Roman Reigns thing template is not working because it's not, in regards to us having to, we have to be force fed Roman Reigns promos. And again, I will stand up for Roman Reigns because he's being dealt what he has to be dealt. He has no other choice if he wants to make in the WWE. And he's grown leaps and bounds in his wrestling abilities and so on and so forth. But I think this is the time for Roman Reigns to go in the office and say, listen, something needs to be done. I'm tired of reading off of these scripts. This is not working, and it's not working. Reading off of scripts is not working, period. Especially if you're trying to develop a talent to have an organic pop like someone such as Daniel Bryan or, Kevin Owens. Getting that organic feel with a homegrown talent, it's tough. You did it with Dolph Ziggler. He had an organic feel to him, and he's a homegrown talent. So it can work, but you can't just keep force-feeding it these awful promos. Who's writing this stuff? It's just ridiculous. And you can't, whoever's writing for Roman Reigns should be demoted or should be coached or something. Because as a promo guy, you cannot sit there, if you're trying to build his character as a babyface, you can't sit there and talk for 90 seconds, and then stop waiting for the crowd to react to you as if they're going to have a positive reaction. If you want to protect Roman Reigns, again, I say, get him off that mic. Have the lights go off. You come in, you spear Sheamus, the lights go back off. Next thing you know, no one's there. You go through the League of Nations Austin style. Throughout the whole night, you have matches, random matches with the League of Nations. Roman Reigns come in and he spears all of them throughout the night of Raw. He cost Del Rio the U.S. title in some way against somebody. That's how you book Roman Reigns. You book him as a no-nonsense guy, as an anti-hero, just like Austin. And that's what's going to make him work. Coming in, spearing people just like Austin did. He would just come in, stun someone, and leave. And that's exactly what they should do with Roman Reigns. You can't just keep putting a mic on him and expecting it to work. Have him come in, have a no-nonsense attitude, what actually put him over in the first place with the Shield, and use that, and that will work. Period. It's going to work. Dolph Ziggler is the correct answer. What's the next question is, who competed for the Money in the Bank case at TLC 2012? What was that match for the Money in the Bank case? All right, let's do a Flavor of the Week real quick. We got about 90 seconds on it.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
So, real quick, reliving the NWO, such an amazing debut, and DDP was talking about Scott Hall. It was just, one of the most memorable moments in pro wrestling history when, talk about a jump. I remember Lex Luger, had that very surprising jump when, he came out the Mall of America on Nitro, the first Nitro. But Scott Hall coming out, from the crowd and, you want to know why I'm here? It was absolutely incredible. You know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. Awesome time, Derek.
Awesome time. And it was a time when my buddies and I would, and even my brother, we would, they'd watch WCW, I'd watch WWE, and they would call me. I'd get like 4 or 5 phone calls during the night. Switch over. Do you believe he just won? It was crazy. Everyone knew Razor Ramon. Scott Hall shows up on Monday Night Raw, on Nitro. Then you got Kevin Nash shows up. You'll never have that again in wrestling modern era, because there was just so you didn't have the internet. You didn't have so easy access to rumors and dirt sheets. I mean, it's a time you'll never get back, and that's a shame, because it was just so much. Like you and I say, Monday Night Raw and Nitro. Monday nights was like Christmas. It was just you couldn't wait. That's all you cared about throughout the whole week. And again, you'll never have that again. The surprises, just the things that had happened. It was a special time, and you'll never get that again in wrestling. I don't think, because there's just so much. Everything everything that's going to happen before it does.
Right. Very true. Cena, Ziggler, that is correct. And Ziggler actually beat Cena. Very interesting there. And Cena lost the next year, too, against two. And what was at stake? Real quick, predictions for TLC this Sunday. Del Rio, Swagger, who you have?
I've got Del Rio.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Charlotte and Paige for the Divas Championship.
Charlotte.
Absolutely. ECW Originals, which is the Dudley's Dream and Rhino against the Wyatt Family. 8-man tag team elimination tables match.
Wyatt Family.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going over. New Day against the Usos against Lucha Dragons, Triple Threat. Ladder match, tag team championship. Who you got?
New Day.
I do as well. Owens Ambrose, Intercontinental Championship.
I want to say Dean Ambrose is going to win.
I agree. I think Ambrose is going to take it as well. And then finally, Sheamus Roman Reigns, TLC match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
Sheamus will find a way to win.
I agree. I think they're not going to put on Reigns yet. They're going to continue to make him build, and I hope it's worth it. Hope it's worth looking at, and not this crap that we've been handed the past few weeks. Special shout out to Diamond Dallas Page. Thank you so much for being on the show. Awesome time. Enjoy TLC this week. We'll be back next week to talk about it. Until then, enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless. Daddy loves Ian and Elijah, and thank you. Bye-bye.